Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
From small town Ohio to the heart of Washington, Vice President J.D. Vance has quickly become a rising force within American politics. But beyond the headlines, who is he really? And how much of a key role did he play in President Trump's comeback? Well, joining me now as we take a closer look is Josh Glancy, who's editor of the News Review with the Sunday Times. Josh, thank you so much for being with us. I mean, you've met and interviewed J.D. Vance on many occasions. What are your own impressions of him and his personality? I suppose, very basically, did you like him?
Yes, I did like J.D. Vance. I really met him properly in 2017. I spent a couple of days with him in Ohio, interviewing him about his then book, Hillbilly Elegy. And yes, he's a bit like me. He's a bearded millennial who spends a little bit too much time online, is a little bit too obsessed with political debate and discourse. And we had lots to talk about. He's entertaining. He's thoughtful. He's quite pugnacious, you know, he's not afraid of expressing a sharp opinion, of a disagreement, but he's good company. But I met him mainly in 2017, where he was really transitioning politically at the time and sort of trying to work out where he fitted in America's political constellation with Trump, obviously, dominating the airwaves.
Yeah, and I mean, and his book that you mentioned, Hillbilly Elegy, was completely fascinating and compelling and is still such a good read. But he, I would imagine, given what you've said there, was a different prospect at that time in 2017 to what we see now. Is that fair, do you think?
Yeah, some things were the same. Some things are very different. He was very critical of Trump still. You know, at the time, he'd been quite outspoken about Trump as a really a toxic figure in American public life. He'd even gone as far as saying he could be America's Hitler if we're not careful. And when I asked him about Trump, he said, look, this guy's got, he's diagnosing a lot of what's wrong with American society, but he's shown no evidence that he has the solutions and he has the answers. And he was still saying, you know, I don't want to go into politics necessarily because the Republican Party isn't right for me right now. It's not where I'd want it to be. So he was still very much on the critical side of Trump. But his politics have always been conservative, and he's always leant towards the Republican side of the ledger. But he rather embarked on a journey from that moment to where he is now politically.
Let's go back then and talk about his origins and his upbringing. Just remind us of his story.
Yeah, so he was born, he grew up in Middletown, Ohio. You know, it was a broken family. And his mother struggled a lot with drug addiction, which he's spoken about a fair amount. And so he was mainly raised by his mamaw and his grandfather, his grandparents. I think he was always quite successful academically and quite driven. And so he was clearly had a strong desire to get out of that environment. They weren't dirt poor, but they were a family. They'd come down from the Appalachian Mountains in Kentucky down to the plains in Ohio. They'd sort of joined the middle class, and then things had rather fallen apart by the time J.D. Vance came on the horizon. And he was looking for a way out. And like a lot of Americans from his kind of background, he joined the U.S. Marines. He served as a kind of army journalist almost in Iraq, where he was pretty unimpressed, ended up being pretty unimpressed with America's war in Iraq. And that was quite formative for him. And then he kind of ended up on a track towards the U.S. elite, if you like, the kind of coastal elite of America. He went to Ohio State University, but then to Yale Law School, which is really kind of training ground for American superstars.
So
and post-Yale, go on.
He sounds, Josh, if we were talking about somebody in this part of the world, a sort of a Thatcherite, you know, somebody who came from humble beginnings but had real ambition to get to what he saw as the upper echelons. Is that fair, do you think?
I think that is fair. And I think that if you read Hillbilly Elegy, there is some of that quite Thatcher-Reagan era language, the kind of pull yourself up by the bootstraps, you know, and he's quite unsympathetic in the book to some of the people he grew up with, and a sense that they, you know, they need to get on for themselves and they can't just expect handouts. Mm-hmm. He's moved away from that a little bit because he came to think that actually the system was so stacked against some of these people that, you know, they really never stood a chance, particularly around things like the opioid epidemic and the way very addictive painkillers were allowed to ravage Midwestern communities like his own. So, but yeah, you're right that in his kind of formative political years, he was somewhat akin to Thatcher, right?
He, but that book, I mean, we both referenced it and clearly both read it and you interviewed him about it at the time. But in that moment, he became the man, the go-to man. You know, he can explain everything that's wrong with America. He can at the very least diagnose what the problem is. That was sort of the zeitgeist around him at that time, wasn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, I think I described him as the anti-Trump in my magazine profile from that time. He became beloved of CNN TV because he was authentic. He was actually from the Midwest, actually from a kind of hillbilly community, if you like. And so unlike Trump, he was talking about these people of which he was one of them. So, you know, as Midwestern voters moved towards Trump and basically caused a political earthquake in 2016, he had just published this best-selling book. And so he was the perfect kind of tribune of those voters. And so everyone was looking for him to explain, well, what's just happened? What's gone wrong? Why do they see it forgotten? Why have people thrown their lot in with Trump? Which is a question that many people who don't like Trump are still asking themselves a decade later. So he was put there on the TV studios to explain this. But after a while, I think he got quite fed up with that, Rob.
Mm-hmm. And then he clearly decides that he needs to shift his position because he can see what side his bread might be buttered on, particularly when that Senate seat comes up in 2021 in Ohio. He needs Trump really to give him his blessing. So he starts to shift his position fairly radically.
Yeah, so this is really the fascinating, I think the most fascinating question about J.D. Vance and the central one, which is clearly he moved considerably. He went from being very anti-Trump to extremely pro-him. To what extent was that cynical ambition and calculation? And to what extent was there a sincere political journey, a political conversion that happened with Vance? My answer is both. A lot of people tend to view it as very cynical. Clearly, I think his ambition brought him on the Trump train, if you like, further and faster than he might otherwise have gone. But I think Vance really did come round to the idea that Trump was his guy. And I think there's a number of really interesting reasons for that. One of them is that when I spoke to him in 2017, he didn't think Trump was going to deliver anything that he cared about. He didn't trust him. He thought he was just a showboating TV star and a New Yorker. And then what Trump did in his first term was actually he did deliver on key things that Vance cares about. He delivered conservative Supreme Court judges that then overturned the Roe v. Wade federal abortion. He kept America out of foreign military engagements for the most part, which is something that Vance is very passionate about. And he was very restrictionist about immigration. You know, he got migration over the southern border down by significant amount. And so I think Trump proved to Vance, to some extent, that he could deliver on these big key issues. And I also think Vance became radicalized. You know, American life became very polarized. You had to pick a team if you're in politics. And he felt that the Democrats, you know, the way they behaved towards Trump, the way they tried to negate his presidency through investigations, the way they tried to throw out the Supreme Court nomination of Brett Kavanaugh in 2018. This is a Supreme Court judge who J.D. Vance's wife, Usha, clerked for, and they were close to. I think he felt all of these things meant that he couldn't just sit on the fence. And actually, as he actually said it quite explicitly in a Time magazine interview in 2021, he said, Trump, you know, I care about these voters and these people. Trump is the guy they want to be president. So I need to just, and his exact words were, suck it up. And get behind Trump.
But how did he manage that relationship with Donald Trump, having said what he said about him previously? Did he have to go on bended knee and plead and beg forgiveness?
I think he may well have done exactly that. Yes, it was a process and it was difficult because he was obviously on the record with all these quite pugnacious statements about Trump criticising him. He worked pretty hard to do it. He had a lot of help from Peter Thiel, who was his benefactor and supporter and patron. This is the Silicon Valley billionaire who was a very early supporter of Trump's and had a lot of credibility with Trump because of that. Thiel took him to Mar-a-Lago in 2021 to go and see Trump, and yes, bend the knee. And Trump gave him a bit of stick for all the things he said in the past, but also was convinced that actually this guy's on the team now. It helped a lot that Trump's son, Donald Jr., is a big fan of J.D. Vance, and they became close friends. And Don Jr. has vouched for Vance and helped him sort of gain access to the Trump inner circle. So all of these things came together, but ultimately the Trump team and Trump himself became convinced that actually this guy's one of us. And that's very much how they see the world. They're quite kind of tribal and binary in how they see the world. And he convinced them that he was indeed one of them.
Now, there are some who think that he will be the next president of the United States. What do the Republican Party, what do they think of him? Have they taken him in? Have they wrapped their arms around him?
Well, I mean, there's obviously a very, very long way to go till 2028, and much can happen. But the Republican Party really now is the party of Trump for the moment. The kind of old line Republican Party, there's not much of it left. There aren't that many of the sort of big power brokers from 10, 15 years ago left. So he's popular in the Trump camp. The president likes him. The president's son likes him. He is also popular amongst the Silicon Valley donors and the Silicon Valley bigwigs who've kind of broken for Trump in the last few years, because he obviously has this close connection to Peter Thiel. They see him as a guy they can work with, who understands them. He acts as a bit of a bridge in the Trump coalition between different factions. He's popular with the MAGA base, the voters who, as I said earlier, do see him as one of them. And speaking quite authentically for them. He's young, he's dynamic, he has a beautiful wife, a nice family, he speaks well. He goes on to liberal media outlets and gives it with them with both barrels. I'd say he's pretty popular. A lot could go wrong for Vance. There's many banana skins. So I think it's far too soon to say, oh, you know, he may be the next president, but he's certainly in a very strong position.
Yeah, he's a contender, and he's put himself there. I mean, he's very high profile for a vice president, isn't he? We've heard an awful lot about him. And I mean, the first thing that pops into your mind when you think about what do you know about J.D. Vance is that public meeting in the Oval Office with President Zelensky and how he behaved at that time.
Yeah, I would say he is the most prominent vice president since Dick Cheney under George W. Bush. He's been given a lot of license to get on the front foot, to take Trump's message to the world. You know, Trump is not a spring chicken. So having a guy he trusts who can authentically deliver his message to the world, who's a good media performer, is actually pretty helpful at this point. And we saw that in that Oval Office meeting with Zelensky that's now become infamous, where A, Vance was there, which not all vice presidents would have been, but B, he was able to take the lead and criticize Zelensky for not being sufficiently grateful towards Trump and towards America. And, you know, that created a disagreement that ended the meeting and reverberated around the world. But it also showed that Vance is in a strong position internally with Trump and is very willing to be his attack dog when the moment comes.
Yeah, I mean, you'd love to know how Trump feels about him. You know, is he slightly wary of him? I don't know if you saw that press conference in the Rose Garden when Donald Trump was announcing the tariffs. And at the beginning, there was like a preamble when they were all taking their seats. And he said something throwaway like, oh, there's JD. JD is great. He's really growing in confidence now. And I thought, ooh, that's a bit of a swipe, isn't it?
Yeah, it sounds like you're sort of a form teacher at parents' evening or something, doesn't it? Look, I think Donald Trump is a difficult boss. And JD Vance's biggest challenge, really, is the audience of one. I think he rates him. I think he picked him as vice president, and then he had a few stumbles early on in the race, and Trump had some second thoughts, but he really came through. He did a very, very good vice presidential debate against Tim Walz, really wiped the floor with him. That gained him a lot of credibility. Trump then asked him to oversee the cabinet nominations, getting them through confirmed in the Senate, which Vance did successfully. He has asked him to oversee the TikTok brief, which is, you know, should TikTok be, does it need to be sold from its Chinese owners? So he's shown a lot of trust in Vance. Doesn't mean he thinks this guy's the successor. Doesn't mean it means he's the anointed one. You know, I wouldn't, Trump's already floated the idea of trying for a third term. This may end up being something he actually quite seriously tries to pursue, which would obviously put Vance in an incredibly awkward, difficult position. There may be some sort of loyalty test down the line, as there was with Mike Pence over January 6th, that Vance just can't bring himself to pass. Donald Trump is a difficult boss, so I don't envy him that. And if he doesn't keep Trump on side, he's not in position to become president in 3 years' time, because it's Trump's movement, it's Trump's party, they're Trump's voters at the end of the day.
Yeah, as you say, that's his hardest job, isn't it, staying on the right side of Donald Trump. Thank you so much, Josh, for taking us through all of that. Josh Glancy there, editor of the News Review at the Sunday Times.